This is the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. We are back after the holiday season. Hope you had a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we're starting the new year off with a couple very special guests today. Joining me momentarily is Mr. Larry Reed. Larry is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. I caught up with Larry around the holidays, and I'll be sharing that conversation with you momentarily. Also updating me on a recent admission by a former Fed governor that the Federal Reserve, through its monetary policies, has created a number of bubbles. It was really a shocking admission, something we've been talking about for quite a long time here on the program. And it's something that we have been suggesting that you not only come to understand more completely, but also take steps to protect yourself from what we believe lies ahead. And we do have some resources to help you do that. We do have a one-day new retirement rules class coming up on Saturday, January the 30th. That's just a few weeks away. The cost for the class is just $49. You can get more information or register while capacity remains by visiting the website newretirementrules.com. The website, again, newretirementrules.com. That class begins at 9 a.m. and concludes at 2:30 p.m. Your registration fee also includes a lunch for you and a guest. Again, the website newretirementrules.com. And we also, you probably heard the interview, hopefully a couple weeks ago, with Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff. In November, Congress and the President made significant changes in the way that Social Security benefits can be collected. So we are offering three free workshops coming up here in January. They're actually free dinner workshops. They begin at 6 o'clock p.m. They conclude at 7:30 p.m. with a complimentary dinner. We talk all about different ways to maximize Social Security benefits under the new law. If you're between the ages of 55 and 65, we would encourage you to attend. These classes are filling up quickly because they are free, and they are they do include also a complimentary dinner. We'll be at the Highlands Golf Club on January the 19th. We'll be at Stonewater Country Club on January 21 and Boulder Creek Golf Club on January 26. All you have to do to get more information or register is visit socialsecuritydinner.com. The website again, socialsecuritydinner.com. Joining me once again on the Everything Financial radio program today is Mr. Lawrence Reed. Larry is president of the Foundation for Economic Education. He is also the author of the recently published book, Excuse Me, Professor, Challenging the Myths of Progressivism. And Larry, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Dennis. It's always a pleasure.
So, Larry, let's talk about the premise of your book, Excuse Me, Professor, and what motivated you to write it.
Okay. Well, it's all over the headlines these days that so much of American academia, colleges and universities, are dominated by the progressive ideology, and quite often students are not exposed to anything substantive in opposition to it. So my purpose in writing the book was to provide ammunition for students primarily, but really it's available and accessible by anybody to be able to rebut some of the progressive myths and misconceptions that we hear all the time.
So, Larry, let's, in the time we have, just jump in and talk about some of these myths. Go ahead and pick one.
Okay. Well, one of my favorites is the myth that Upton Sinclair, in his book The Jungle, which had such enormous impact about 100 years ago, somehow constitutes a damning indictment of capitalism. And a lot of people these days know from their high school upbringing that that's the message that they got, that Upton Sinclair wrote this book and he showed how terrible the conditions were in American meatpacking plants in Chicago, and that that somehow made the case for government regulation. But when you look more closely at the facts, you discover that, first of all, it was a novel. This was not a documentary. He hardly spent any time at all in Chicago. And the book was full of stuff that he just made up. Even President Teddy Roosevelt said he was a terrible liar, that much of what he had written was just totally fabricated. He was paid $500, which was a decent sum of money in those days. by the Socialist Party to write this novel, hoping that it would cause Americans to support a much bigger government. And it's just full of cooked up stuff. One of my favorites is a reference in his book to men falling into the vats of ground up meat, and then themselves being ground up, and then the meat being packaged and served to consumers. Well, the fact is that never happened. And I discovered that when I was trying to find out, okay, if that did happen, what are the names of the men to whom that happened? I mean, surely they would be progressive icons. There must be monuments to them somewhere. Surely their family said, hey, what happened to Bob? You know, and wonder why he didn't come home from work that day. But the fact is, there's no such evidence. Never happened. And yet it's made its way into the American mythology that led to regulation and still to this day supports the basic view that American businessmen are out to poison their customers, and government has to come in and save us from it all.
So we talked also, Larry, prior to us beginning our recorded conversation today, some of the myths that relate to the causes of the Great Depression. Could you expand on that?
I'd be happy to. It's one of my favorites as well. This is what's still typically taught in so many schools, that free enterprise, capitalism, the free market, whatever you want to call it, was responsible for the cause of the Great Depression. And then government, as an innocent bystander, had to come in, and primarily in the person of Franklin Roosevelt, save us all through all kinds of government intervention. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. The Great Depression that began in 1929 was made possible. In fact, it was made inevitable by the monetary or money policy of the Federal Reserve. And this will sound familiar to people who remember the not-too-distant past. From 1924 to late 1928, the Federal Reserve was expanding the nation's money and credit supply at a very feverish pace. It drove interest rates to all-time lows and created a bubble in the stock market. There was a land boom in Florida that was fed by this easy money. And then when the Fed in 1929 began to reverse policy and raise interest rates substantially, it pricked that bubble and everything came crashing down. But what made it even worse and prolonged the Depression for years thereafter were things that both Republicans and Democrats did under Hoover and then Roosevelt. They raised tariffs to an all-time high in 1930. And that virtually closed the borders to the import-export trade. And then on top of that, in 32, they doubled the income tax. And then Roosevelt comes in after that, and through a series of regulations and the creation of new agencies, prolongs the Depression with all kinds of crazy, costly rules, including the destruction of American agricultural produce in an effort to reduce supply and raise prices. So it lingered for a long time, longest depression in American history, because of the very government that caused it in the first place.
Well, we're running out of time in this segment. Larry, if someone would like to pick up your book, Excuse Me, Professor, Challenging the Myths of Progressivism, where would they find the book?
A lot of places. They could find it on our website, which is fee.org, or they can get it from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. It's available online from a lot of places. Excuse Me, Professor is the title.
I would encourage the listeners to check it out. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. And joining me on today's program once again is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education, Mr. Lawrence Reed. He is also the author of Excuse Me, Professor, Challenging the Myths of Progressivism, and we're chatting with him today about his book. And Larry, let's talk about this idea of income inequalities needing to be corrected or adjusted for or compensated for, might be a better way to put it, by the government.
Yeah, a lot of people today assume that, and you can bet that in the presidential campaign next year there'll be a lot of talk about the evils of income inequality. Well, a lot of the income inequality we have in the country today is the direct result of government policy. For instance, the minimum wage prices the least skilled out of the workplace, which makes for lower incomes among the very people that it's supposed to help. And, of course, corporate bailouts tend to help the big existing politically well-connected companies at the expense of the smaller newcomers. That tends to exacerbate income inequality. And, of course, the bigger the government gets, the more it makes the economy rigid, the more it tends to benefit the already established and make it difficult for the newcomer, the small businessman, to get started. And that has a negative effect on equality of income. But more deeply, in that section of the book, I talk about the fact that people are different. And you can't expect that free people in free markets are going to generate similar incomes. We're different in terms of the talents we have, when we discover our talents and how we deploy them, how well we put them to good use. We're different in terms of how long and hard and smart we work. We're different in terms of how much of our incomes we save versus how much we spend. Lots of reasons why you have to expect that unequal people that are born that way are not going to generate equal incomes in the marketplace, irrespective of their contributions to it.
You know, Larry, that also speaks to the fact that many times, maybe more times than not, I'd like your comment, government programs or policies lead to unintended consequences.
All the time. All the time. In fact, most of the time when we economists are talking, we're explaining how what was intended didn't actually turn out that way. You name it. I mean, when it comes to, say, the progressive income tax, the thought was, well, this will give government the amount of money it needs, and it's only fair. Well, you know, we've had rates in America as high as 91% on marginal income, and yet we still run huge deficits. The government always wants more, and it always finds ways, sometimes in a sneaky fashion, to get it, not from the wealthy, there are only so many of those, but from the broad middle class, which is where the money is.
Larry, in your book, you also talk about this idea or notion that it's the obligation of the rich to give back. Can you comment?
I hear this a lot, even from rich people. They'll make a charitable contribution, and in a very fine spirit, they'll say, I want to give back. And while I applaud their willingness to assist worthy causes, I don't think we should use that phrase, give back, because it kind of implies that, well, maybe it wasn't mine in the first place, or maybe just because I've been successful and I have something, I owe it to somebody, or I'm obligated in some way. If you've already, for instance, created a business, run tremendous risk in doing so, hired people, created a payroll, solved problems of other people through the products that you create, the inventions you bring about or that you market, you've already done society a huge amount of good. And just because you've been successful at it doesn't mean that you're somehow obligated any more than anybody else to give it away.
Larry, it seems like there is this ever-growing sense of entitlement, and it kind of relates to that, that you know, the rich seem to have gotten rich at the expense of someone else and really not for benefiting someone else, and that's really not how true capitalism works. How did we get here? Where did we take the wrong turn?
Well, Americans at some point in our history, and you can point to various moments when this was apparent, it's gathered steam over time. Americans, just like ancient Romans, came to discover that working for a living isn't the only way to do it. You can also vote for one. And when we discovered the welfare state and began to ask government to do all sorts of things for us, it put us on this path toward, this unsustainable path, I might add, toward the expectation that we're entitled to these things and that government should provide them. It put us on the path to deficits, out-of-control spending, $19 trillion national debt. This is what happens with welfare states. They always, unless turned around, they always get out of control as politicians appeal to the masses and buy votes and send the bill to the next generation.
Well, we're chatting today with Mr. Lawrence Reed, who is president of the Foundation for Economic Education. He is the author of the book, Excuse Me, Professor, Challenging the Myths of Progressivism. And you can get that at fee.org or, I'm sure, Amazon. Larry, for our listeners that might not be familiar with the organization FEE.org, explain what it is that you do.
We're an educational organization, a tax-deductible charitable foundation. We don't make grants, we seek them, but in the process of using the grants given to us by other foundations and individuals and businesses, we try to teach young people primarily the virtues of free enterprise, personal character, and all the elements that we think made America great in the first place, things like private property, personal responsibility, respect for the lives and the property of others, limited government, and a focus on creating a better future, not just getting what you can now, especially if you're trying to do it at the expense of others through the political process.
Well, Larry, we've been chatting in this segment about the progressive notions, that the misguided notions that the government needs to correct or adjust for income inequalities, and rich people have to give back, and yet there are those Christians that say, well, wait a minute, this is biblical. Jesus was a progressive. Didn't Jesus advocate redistribution of wealth? And by taking these positions, aren't you somehow anti-Christian?
We have a chapter in the book, in fact, on this very subject, and I've subsequently expanded it, doubled it in size, and we've published it as a monograph, which you can read on our website. It's called Rendering Unto Caesar, Was Jesus a Socialist? Well, one of my favorite passages from the New Testament, it comes in the book of Luke, when a man approaches Christ and he says to him, Master, speak to my brother, that he divideth the inheritance with me. In other words, hey, use your influence or your power to redistribute the wealth here on my behalf. And Christ's reply was, man, who made me a judge or divider over you? And in other places in the New Testament, you'll find time and again that Christ's message focused on inner renewal, spiritual renewal. He never once called for the political redistribution of wealth, never once suggested that it was the proper role of government to take from some at the point of a gun and give to others. That's total myth. In fact, he came to reinforce things like the Mosaic Law, the centerpiece of which is the Ten Commandments. And the Eighth and the Tenth Commandments clearly say, thou shalt not covet, and thou shalt not steal. And neither one says it's okay to covet or to steal if you think you can spend it better than the guy who earned it. Or it's okay to covet or steal if you're absolutely sure that you're entitled to it even though somebody else earned it. Or that it's okay if you hire a politician to get it for you. I think we pretty thoroughly, in many additional ways, respond to that myth that that Jesus advocated redistribution of wealth. He did not.
Well, we have been chatting today with Mr. Lawrence Reed. He is the author of Excuse Me, Professor, Challenging the Myths of Progressivism. Larry, always a pleasure to have you on the program. We'd love to have you back.
Okay, anytime. Thank you, Dennis, and best wishes for the holidays.
And same to you. Thank you. Well, before we close this segment, let me remind you that we do have a couple of free educational resources coming up here during the month of January to help you get the new year started right. As you're probably aware, if you've been listening to the program, there are a whole new set of Social Security collection rules now that will affect people this year beginning May 1. If you're between the ages of 55 and 65, we would invite you to attend one of our free Social Security maximization workshops. The workshops begin at 6 p.m. and conclude at 7:30 p.m. A lot of information packed into an hour and a half. We conclude each of our workshops with a free dinner. So consequently, these workshops are filling up quickly. There is capacity, however. If you would like to check it out, you can go to socialsecuritydinner.com. The website to register or to get more information, again, is socialsecuritydinner.com. We will be at the Highlands Golf Club on January the 19th, Stonewater Country Club on January 21, Boulder Creek on January 26. Again, the website, socialsecuritydinner.com. You can also get information about our new retirement rules class, which we'll be holding on January the 30th this month, a one-day class beginning at 9, concluding at 2:30. That website, newretirementrules.com. We'll be back after these words.
Give me your money. Just give me money.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio Program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. And special thanks again to our special guest today, Mr. Larry Reed, for joining us. Momentarily, we will be catching up with Mr. Mitch Shedlock and talking about a shocking admission this week by one of the former members of the Federal Reserve Board who admitted that Fed policy has led to asset pricing bubbles. Now, if that is not enough to make you pay attention as to what's going on in the stock market, particularly this past week, and learn more about how monetary policy will affect your investments, I don't know what is. And if you've not yet taken time to understand this completely and understand how it might affect you and apply to your situation, I would encourage you to attend our new retirement rules class. You can get more information on the new retirement rules class or register while capacity remains by visiting the website newretirementrules.com. The website, again, newretirementrules.com. That is a one-day class. The cost for you and a guest for all the materials and lunch is just $49. So, again, check it out at newretirementrules.com. And we also have three Social Security maximization workshops coming up during the month of January in light of the new Social Security collection rules. If you're just joining us, we will be at the Highlands Golf Club on January the 19th, Stonewater Country Club on January 21, and January 26 out at Boulder Creek. More information is available by visiting the website, socialsecuritydinner.com. Joining me once again on the program today is Mr. Mike Shedlock. If you want to learn more about his work, all you need to do is Google the term MISH, M-I-S-H. He is the author of MISH's Global Economic Trend Analysis, one of the top financial blogs on the web. And MISH, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be back on. My gosh, what a start to the new year here, huh?
It is crazy. Let's start with MISH, former Dallas Fed governor, I think former being a key word here, Richard Fisher, said that the Fed, in essence, was responsible for the stock market bubble. Can you expand on that?
Oh, sure. Robert Fisher came out in an interview on CNB Squawk Box, and he said, quote, "We front-loaded a tremendous market rally to create a wealth effect. The Federal Reserve is a giant weapon that has no ammunition left." I mean, wow. He is the was the head of the Dallas Fed, president of the Dallas Fed, and he came out flat out and said that on Squawk Box. And the amazing thing to me is how little play this is actually getting outside of a few blogs. You know, he went on to say that he was against QE3, that he argued against it, blah, 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 and the markets are seriously overvalued. The Fed purposely sponsored bubbles for the wealth effect. And the amazing interview, and I've actually got a transcript of it on my blog. So if you search for MISH and Richard Fisher, you can find the actual video as well as a transcript of it. Quite amazing.
Well, let's, for our listeners that maybe don't quite understand all this, let's drill down to a couple of the elements here. First of all, he voted against QE3. For listeners that may not be familiar, explain what quantitative easing is.
Quantitative easing is the Fed goes out and purchases assets, loads up its balance sheet. And when it loads up its assets, it infuses banks with cash. So well over $2 trillion worth of cash the Fed essentially printed and out of thin air and gave to the banks to lend. But there were no borrowers for this money. So the money, these banks in turn parked the funds back at the Fed and collected interest on the money for free. In essence, this was a backdoor way, actually, of bailing out the banks, you know, over a number of years, you know, printing money and then giving the banks free interest on the money, all at taxpayer expense. People ought to be furious about this. No one's even talking about it.
Mish, it's amazing to me that a former Fed governor would come out and say, "We essentially created a bubble," but that's what he said.
That's exactly what he said. And now, he didn't predict, and nor will I. There's a chance that bubble deflates slowly. It's never really happened that way. Or maybe Japan. You know, so stocks are, I believe, 40-50% overvalued here on average. Certainly, they got to a very nice valuation point in March of 2009. But since then, we've just had rally after rally after rally, and it was all based on QE. And that's another thing that Fisher point out, came out and said. He said it was the Fed, and then the ECB, and then China. So all these central banks were doing the same thing, and they said, look, we can get away with this because there's low inflation. Well, there's low price inflation, maybe, if you believe the purported numbers, and it depends on, you know, you have to kind of ignore health care, and you kind of have to ignore education, especially those that have kids in college that don't believe that there's low inflation here. But they got away with it by saying, oh, my gosh, inflation's low. Inflation wasn't low. They re-blew a bubble in asset prices instead. So instead of hugely rising consumer prices, we saw hugely rising asset prices to the point, you know, millennials cannot afford a house. Housing is no longer affordable. It was for a brief time in 2009, 2010. But they re-blew the housing bubble, and we've got a massive bubble in equities, a massive bubble in junk bonds, and the junk bond market is becoming unglued right now. And so what are they going to do? And so here we are with this massive bubble, and the Fed's starting to hike just as some currency crises are starting to unfold, especially in China. It's a real mess, and one way or another, valuations are going to get back in line, and that can happen either via a crash or just a series of, you know, 10% move downs, say, you know, 10% each year for the next 4 years. There would be no real crash there, but for pension plans, take a look at Illinois. Illinois pension plans are on average 40% funded. You know, where does that go if the stock market declines 5 or 10% a year for the next 4 years? And it's not just Illinois. Illinois will be the state worst off, but a lot of states are going to be in serious, serious trouble if there's a stock market correction. That's one of the serious problems with what the Fed did by targeting assets specifically, and Fisher used the words for the wealth effect. Well, who did the wealth effect benefit? It benefited the banks. It benefited those people first in line to money, and that's the already rich. Everyone else, the middle class, has been shrinking because of what the Fed did. Fisher didn't admit that, but I believe he knows it.
You know, Mish, if you're a 401k investor listening to this, where you have choices of investing in stock mutual funds or bond mutual funds, you have to be absolutely furious. How much is this actually going to cost, you know, middle America before asset prices get back in line?
Well, you know, think of it this way. Let's say that stocks fall in half here, and or even by 40% here. And let's say they are 30%, and they linger there for a few years. Wow, you know, when your pension plan depends on pension plan assumptions are 8% a year, and by the way, they figure out underfunding, assuming they're going to get that 8%. If instead of 8%, they even get 0% returns for 4 years, they're in serious trouble. Right now, the average person is actually oblivious to this. First off, the average person most people don't even have stocks. You know, those that do don't even understand we're in a bubble, or they think we're going to be bailed out. This would be a very, very bad time for bubble to pop because of aging demographics. All these people have built up their 401k. You know, they think they're going to retire. They think their assets are safe. All of a sudden, you know, the stock market goes to hell. Where does that leave them? No one's concerned about this yet. They'll all be screaming at the Fed 2 or 3 years from now, or sooner if there's a crash, you know, to do something. The Fed already did do something, didn't they? They blew this bubble.
Yeah. Mitch, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment, but when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Mr. Mitch Shedlock, and we'll talk to him about what's going on in China, and are we seeing the beginning of a currency crisis? Everything Financial Radio returns after these words. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I have the pleasure of chatting today with Mr. Mike Shedlock. If you're not a reader of Mish's blog, you should be. You can Google the term Mish, M-I-S-H, and you'll find his blog very easily. It's titled Mish's Global Economic Trend Analysis. And Mish, when you look at what's going on just this past week, U.S. stock market's down significantly. China's stock market was open on Thursday for, I believe, a half hour before their curbs kicked in and they shut down the market.
14 minutes, 17 seconds, actually.
Crazy.
A new record, Dennis.
So you know, just crazy stuff. And then there was some news about China's currency this past week. Do you want to fill the listeners in?
Sure. The Chinese stock market was halted twice in the last week, and once today, actually. And so here we are. They were down 7% on two occasions this week, 15% in a week. That's a pretty nasty week, actually. The currency, the offshore versus onshore yuan signals another 2% yuan devaluation is coming up. Now, it's kind of weird, and people might not understand what I just meant by that. China doesn't float the yuan. They peg it to the dollar officially in China, yet it floats outside of China. The spread has gotten really wide here. The people outside of China are betting that the yuan is going to fall. And this is a rather amazing turn of events for most people, because everyone thought that the yuan was undervalued. It was a one-way ticket up. Hedge funds were, you know, all scrambling to get in China. Everyone was betting, you know, that this yuan was undervalued. I said on my blog years ago, I said, you know, if China floated the yuan here, I'm not positive it would rally at all. And in fact, I said I thought that it would sink. Well, we're seeing that now. With China allowing the yuan to trade in these bands outside of China, and so there's pressure now on the yuan to sink. And why? Because China's growth has been overreported. China's growth has not been what everyone thought it was, what they claim it to be. No one believes the numbers out of China. The numbers in the U.S. are bad enough. The numbers in China are far worse, to the point that they're not believable. So this is what we're seeing. So we're starting to see some unwinding here. Yet the U.S. still wants the yuan to rise. There's protectionist fears in Congress. Everyone wants to protect their manufacturers, which is what China wants to do too. China would actually like the yuan lower, but that could start a trade war with the U.S. Donald Trump is squawking right now. He said he would stick it to China. He would not let them get away with this. So meanwhile, Europe is essentially doing the same thing. Mario Draghi has loaded up the ECB's balance sheet, trying to suppress the value of the euro. Japan wants to sink the value of the yen. Everyone wants to sink the value of their currency to support exports. Well, that's not mathematically possible, is it? Every currency cannot be lower versus every other one, and that's what these central banks are all attempting to do. I've predicted for a number of years, without putting a date on it, that there's going to be a currency crisis at some point. It's possible that it started now. It's possible that this blows over. But, you know, we're seeing the inklings right now of how this might play out.
And, Mitch, given that it seems that the global economy is slowing significantly, won't this trend of currency devaluation just intensify from here?
It has to with what they're doing. We've got negative interest rates, at which no one even thought possible, and in the absence of central bank intervention, can't happen. I mean, imagine a time preference that says you would rather have 90 cents today, you know, than a dollar tomorrow. I mean, that is the kind of mentality that we're talking about here. Janet Yellen, you know, came out the last month and said, you know, it's possible that the natural rate of interest is negative. That's impossible. It mathematically makes no sense for such a statement. Apparently these guys believe it or they wouldn't have said it, but, you know, the real world just doesn't function that way. So here we are. They're all doing these interventions, and it hasn't helped the real economy. They're all trying to drive inflation higher, but they've failed to see the inflation that they've caused in the prices of assets. And it's when asset bubbles bust that the real problems begin. We had an asset bubble bust in 2000 when the dot-com market imploded. The Fed's response under Greenspan to fix that was to create a housing bubble. We had the housing bubble collapse starting late 2007. The Fed's response to that was to blow another housing bubble and to blow an asset bubble in stocks and bonds. These bubbles, by definition, are going to break. And, you know, here we are at that point here now where we've even got the Dallas Fed, as we talked in the first half, admitting that the Fed blew a bubble and they did it on purpose for the wealth effect. The wealth effect didn't benefit the average person. So here we are.
So, Mish, what does the average person do moving ahead with their IRA?
I would raise cash. I mean, a quite reasonable thing to do would be to go all cash here. That's not exactly what I would recommend. I've liked gold for 2 years, and I've been wrong for 2 years. But I've also been, you know, recommending gold all the way up from actually 250 in 2000, and here it is, well over 1,000 now. So one could have quadrupled their money just by buying gold and actually holding it. So people point to the decline in gold from 1900 down to it's about 1100 now, but that's a pretty huge decline. But it's actually outperformed, you know, most other asset classes since then. So that will certainly be true if equities crash here. So, I mean, I would tell people that better opportunities are coming up, you know, to have a lot of cash, buy some gold. I'm increasingly looking at energy. I mean, oil is just beaten up. It's fallen from 140 down to, it would hit 32 at one point today. So those who want to take a long-term view on thing, you know, look into energy or energy stocks. People ought to be not chasing the things that are flying high that have gone up for years and years and years. You know, Amazon has a P.E. of something like 1,000. Is that really where you want to have your money, where it takes 1,000 years, you know, to get your investment back with interest? No, I look for things that are beat up, and the things that are beat up are energy and gold. And if you don't like those segments, you know, then, you know, just go to cash.
So, Mish, we've got time for probably one more question here. We've got about a minute left in this segment. Is the Fed going to continue with their rate hikes, given what you see going on and the likelihood of recession, at least in my view?
The Fed has penciled in an average of 4 hikes. They're saying 3 to 5. And I wrote about that yesterday. I don't think they're going to get any in. And the reason is, I think a recession is coming. I think we're going to see some huge layoffs. Those won't come out in tomorrow's jobs report, but more likely that, well, they could. But I'm expecting in February, because February is when we get the January jobs data. So I'm expecting some huge layoffs. Already we're seeing announcements at places like Macy's. But the oil is declining because the global economy is slowing, you know, so that's another thing. Manufacturing is clearly in a recession. I've got a chart up on my blog that's really fascinating that shows the correlation between manufacturing and total jobs, not just manufacturing jobs. That's looking at recession. Housing is slowing. Autos are slowing. Everything I'm looking at is decelerating rapidly. My prediction in January of 2015 was the U.S. would be in recession by the end of the year. It's still possible because everything's backdated that we see that, but the first quarter of 2016, if not, is looking quite likely to me, and that is another reason, if I'm even close to being accurate, that you probably don't want to be leveraged in the stock market.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Mish Shedlock. You can find Mish's blog by Googling the term Mish, M-I-S-H. And, Mish, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on, and look forward to being back on next month.
Let me remind you all once again of some free educational resources that we have available. We've got our one-day new retirement rules class coming up on January the 30th. That class will be held at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. You can get more information by visiting the website newretirementrules.com. That website is newretirementrules.com. In light of everything going on in the world and where stocks may be headed, it's certainly advisable to learn more and get another perspective. Also, we do have our Social Security Maximization workshops coming up. If you'd like more information, just go to socialsecuritydinner.com. That website, again, socialsecuritydinner.com. And if you'd like to listen to my interview with Mr. Larry Reed or Ms. Shedlock again, all you have to do is visit the website, everythingfinancialradio.com. We have all of our interviews posted there. You can also visit the iTunes store and subscribe to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. That's our program for this week. Hope you got something you can use. We'll talk again soon. Bye.